WR4AAE monitoring.
AAE, WB4ZPH. Good evening, Stephen.
4ZPH. This is KR4AAE. Good morning to you. Good morning, man. It's been a long day. Good evening.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been a long day for you. I hope it's not morning yet. If it is, I'm probably late for something.
It has been quite the day, and I've got a few more compute cycles left in my brain before it shuts down for the day and says, I'm done.
Yeah, did you make it onto the net tonight? I missed it. I was a little too late.
That's affirmative. I did make it onto the net, and I swear one day I'll remember exactly what I need to say when I go to check in. I just sit back and laugh and just chalk it up and be like, yep, it's one of them days today.
Well, you continue checking in, and it'll just become second nature. I was had class tonight and was driving home, and I was trying to check into the Fleet Talk net, and in the middle of checking in, my radio went black in the car. So I was like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah, the dreaded, uh-oh, the lights went out. Do I smell something burning is the next question to ask myself.
That was my train of thought, too. It's like, well, let me see if anything caught. But it was just a fuse, and I need to complete my install in the car, but I just put a cigarette lighter adapter to the power leads, and the cigarette lighter adapter had a 5-amp fuse in it, and I didn't think about it when I put it together. And then when it went out, I thought to myself, I bet there was a fuse in that cigarette lighter adapter that blew. And when I got home, I confirmed my suspicion. So changed the fuse out, and we're back in business now in the car.
Yeah, good on the figuring it out really quickly. I thought about going the cigarette lighter route as well, and then I got to thinking. I said, you know what? I'm just gonna do it right. So I ran straight to the battery. Negative goes down to the ground on the car, and got everything fused, so it's all good now.
That's a good way, best way to do it. I intend to do the same. I just threw something together one day and then got lazy and didn't finish it out. Do you get any alternator noise or anything like that on your radio in your car after going direct to the battery?
Negative, no noise at all. And I'm on a 2017 Toyota RAV4, no hybrid, and yeah, I get zero noise at all. It's perfectly fine.
That worked out good for you then. I used to have a Toyota FJ Cruiser. It was 07, and that vehicle had a Yaesu FTM 350AR. I think it was the model. I know it was FTM 350, the R or the AR part. I can't remember exactly. But I ran the power leads directly to the battery on that vehicle, and I didn't ground it to the chassis like you're talking about. But I ran the positive and negative leads directly to the battery terminals. And in that vehicle, when I was driving, I could hear through the speaker on the radio of an alternator whine. So if I do that on this car, I'll follow your install and ground it to the chassis, or put some ferrites on the leads.
Yeah, copy that. What vehicle are you in right now, where you've got the setup with the cigarette lighter adapter?
2018 Subaru STI. So part of my challenge is finding a way through the firewall, and there doesn't appear to be an easy way through. One option is to follow the wiring harness, which actually pops out through the fender and above the wheel well and then back into the engine bay.
That does not sound fun at all. What year is Subaru?
2018. I scoped it out and I looked everywhere I could to try and find a way through the firewall and kept coming up short. And so I found that on both the driver and passenger sides, there are some existing wiring harnesses in split loom that pop out and then kind of go above the wheel well and then back into the engine bay. So I guess after explaining that, you now can kind of see why I've been using the cigarette lighter option. It was much easier and quicker to get on the air that way.
Yeah, copy that. I was lucky enough to see a hole that was cut, and it was beveled on both sides, so it wasn't sharp. Put my finger in there just to make sure it wasn't. And it's like Toyota had planned for people to put things in their car other than a radio, like a AM/FM radio, and they said, hey, like, we're going to put this here so you can get into it easier from the main compartment into the engine bay. So I was like, all right, good job, Toyota. I like you even more.
Seems like Toyota does that on most of their models. The Toyota FJ Cruiser I was talking about earlier, I had a similar experience. It was easy on that vehicle to get through the firewall. There was a blank similar to what you found. And prior to that, I had put some radios, at that time I was playing with CB radios, this is many years ago, on a Toyota 4Runner, a 1994 model, and my brother, I'd helped him put a CB radio in the 1996 Tacoma, and on both of those vehicles too, getting through the firewall wasn't difficult at all. They were blanks, so... Yeah, Toyota, I guess they make it a little bit easier for installs like ours.
Yeah, they definitely do that. I am hoping that this car will last me the rest of my life and I would drive it into the grave.
Play your cards right, you might be able to do just that with Toyota. They seem to be reliable vehicles. The two that I had, I miss them sometimes. They're good vehicles. My wife has a Toyota 4Runner now, and normally don't have many problems with them.
Yeah, copy that. KR4AAE. I was looking at getting a 4Runner and giving the RAV4 to the wife, but 4Runners, people know what they have, and they're pricey, but they last forever.
V4ZPH. Yeah, the Toyota established a name for themselves, I think, so now they're not quite as economically priced as they once were. My family used to have a... Toyota Camry, and it was a 89 model. Well, my grandparents had an 89 model and my parents had an 88, and both of them lasted in excess of 250,000 miles, near 300,000 miles with just typical maintenance.
Yeah, copy that. We had a 1996 Toyota Camry, and I think when it was over and said and done with, we put probably 420,000 miles on that vehicle, and it still ran fine.
They're good vehicles. Like I say, they've certainly made a reputation for themselves. So said you had a long day. It's almost getting late now. You normally end your day later than earlier?
It depends on the day of the week. Sometimes I've got to work a little bit later so I can keep in contact with the guys on the West Coast. And then sometimes I need to talk to some folks in the Asia-Pacific region. So I'm up a little later than usual.
Yeah, so you have colleagues in other time zones. That can be challenging when it comes to planning meetings. I've had similar experience in the past.
Yeah, so it's a global organization, so I've got them in every time zone. And sometimes I need to talk to guys in Europe, Asia-Pac, even over here. So it's random from day to day.
What kind of work are you in?
I am in the computer networking field. I manage network connectivity for data centers and sites around the globe for a hardware technology distributor.
Very good. I have similar professional experience. I've been doing networking for probably, I started in 2011, so nearly 15 years or 14 years. So we could probably trade notes on some things, I imagine.
We could. I'm sure we could exchange some good old war stories of the days of staying up late and working on random stuff and the oddest things you ever run into.
I used to work for a ISP, and they sold DSL service, and had plenty of funny stories just from interactions with service technicians or, central office technicians. There was one story that we would sometimes field dial tone calls or DSL calls since they both run on the same cable. The that was calling the ticket in, she called in several times, and her main complaint was every time that the phone rang, her dog would bark and whine. And the support staff, tried to turn her away several times and said, we're terribly sorry, ma'am, but we're not sure that there's much we can do that your dog barks when the phone rings. And so eventually she was so persistent that a technician was dispatched. And the technician went out and, was scratching his head trying to understand. And he eventually traced out the phone line to the underneath crawl space of the house and found that the phone line and the insulation on the line had worn off and was pressed against a metal pipe under the house. I think they said it was a water pipe. Upon further inspection, he found that the dog's chain, metal chain, went back up underneath the crawl space area of the house or the double wide, and it was wrapped around that metal pipe. So every time the phone rang, the ring voltage hit the pipe and then transferred through the dog's chain all the way out to the dog.
I just have to say that poor dog, but God bless the technician who found that. That is, that ranks up there on one of the oddest ones I have ever heard in my life right now.
An odd one, from beginning to end, because in the beginning you get this customer calling in saying, hey, my dog barks when the phone rings, and you you know, when you're in a call center, you're like, well, I that doesn't hardly sound like a technical issue to me. I'm not sure what we can do.
That's a definite odd one. I mean, I'm going to really date myself here, but I go back to the days of America dial-up internet. That's all I'm going to say for now.
I remember AOL. I remember they had those, installation CDs in the grocery stores, and they were giving them away, and it was a big thing.
Yeah, there was in my hometown, there was a call center that I got a job at, and on the last day, I had convinced this guy that he called Domino's Pizza. And the thing is, I had QA on the phone, and I looked back at him, and I could just see him laughing and shaking their head, because that was my last day of work, and I said, I'm going out with a bang.
Funny. Yeah, we had another similar call. This one was for a router in one of the central offices, and a card on the router failed, so it had to be replaced. And we had dispatched a technician out to replace the card with a new one that was provided by Cisco. The technician got there and installed the card, and it failed almost immediately. And so, you know, when two cards go bad in the same slot of the router, next step is to replace the chassis. So, got a replacement chassis. The technician installed the replacement chassis and installed a new card in that same slot, and that card failed in the new chassis. Everything was new. And this happens over, you know, a 3 to 4 day period, because it's quite an effort to replace a router's chassis, because you have to take all the other circuits down and take all the customers down, so it all has to happen at night. But towards the end of that 3 to 4 day period, the technician that's out in the field is talking to one of the network analysts in the office and says, you know, hey, I've been wondering, should this rack shock me every time I touch it? B4ZPH. So the analyst in the office told him, no, yeah, the rack should not be shocking you while you're touching it. So the equipment in the rack were not properly grounded, and so the card was continually being fried every time it was replaced. It was being fried, and replacing the chassis obviously didn't solve the grounding issue, so that was another sort of a laughable troubleshooting experience.
Yeah, the minute you said, should the rack be shocking me, I said, somebody grounded something to the rack. It's happened to me. I've run into it, and I've seen it. I'm like, okay. And I'm touching the rack. I'm like, okay, that's not supposed to happen. I look around. I'm like, yep, somebody did it.
Definitely something you have to be careful of. Think about grounding for ham radio, but telecommunications equipment has to be properly grounded too. It's part of the National Electric Code is for telecommunications equipment to be properly grounded. But if it's not, you run into issues like that, and it can be costly.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure those Cisco router chassis and those cars are not cheap either.
Definitely not. They don't give them away. I think they were at that time they were Cisco ASR9Ks, and yeah, that's not a cheap piece of equipment. But while working there at that service provider, I helped to support Cisco's and Juniper's and that company. They were going really heavily towards Alcatel-Lucent, routers at that time. I think since then Nokia has bought out Alcatel-Lucent. So a lot of various types of equipment I've had the opportunity to work on.
Copy that. I'm not that fortunate to be able to touch all the different vendors. I'm mainly a Cisco guy on the route switch, Fortinet on the firewalls, and Cisco everything else. I would have loved to be exposed to Juniper because I know in a lot of the core networks that is what is running on some of these backbones, and they're pretty solid for backbone work.
Yeah, they at the time I was working there, they were using Juniper MX960s in their core, and they are, you know, as far as economically, they are advantageous to Cisco. Juniper's pricing is better than Cisco, and most service providers use Juniper routers because pricing is better. And, you know, the architecture of the Juniper OS makes it easier to do in-service software updates. And it's a lot easier to roll back config without, you know, having to reboot the device. You can commit configs and have the config automatically roll back after a set period of time. So they're very attractive to the service providers.
Absolutely on that. That would have been, if we had a Juniper, that would have saved me a couple days of work when something went bad on a Cisco router and just had to go all the way back and redo everything. Not my proudest moment, but I got it done.
Well, every experience is a learning experience, and it sounds like you learned from it, so that's good. You do Cisco certifications or any of those types of training?
Was CCNP, that's expired. I was looking at CCNP, the Encore and the NRC. The CCNP now is, to me, it is extremely overwhelming with the random technologies they want you to know. They want you to know a little bit of everything, and it's just overwhelming. And I took it 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Failed it all 4 times. It's going to be either something that requires me to go face-to-face with an instructor, or I learn more about networking and all those different technologies while I'm working on the job, and then say, okay, now this makes sense, and then go for it again.
Hit the nail on the head about the CCNP test. It is a bit too broad, and they used to have a really good, I feel like they used to have a really good test set for CCNP when it was 3 tests. It wasn't easy, but it was relevant when they had CCNP route, CCNP switch, and CCNP troubleshoot. I took those and I had the CCNP, but I allowed it to expire. But the 3 tests, they were challenging, but the material was broken up in such a way that it only challenged you in one domain, and you know you could learn a lot and. A lot of it was applicable. Now the test is, it's too broad and not broad with respect just to networking.
I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, the last time I took it, they wanted you to know a little bit about wireless, a little bit about SDN, and then they had automation in there. With scripting, basic route switch, OSPF, BGP functionality, and that even spanning tree and all the basics, and then on top of that, I'm just like, oh, this is killing me. This is making my brain hurt right now.
I took the Encore It's been several years ago, not long after the test changed, and I was going to take it to renew my CCNP, and I couldn't get it because of just the things you're mentioning. I mean, they have all this about, you know, Ansible and all these other, you know, SDN stuff, but you know, some organizations go that route, but it's, you know, it's costly to go that route. And Cisco's always taken the approach to, you know, to push their products in their tests. And, you know, unless you have something like Cisco DNA Center, you know, you don't really get the opportunity to train yourself or to learn much about Cisco's approach to SDN.
Copy that. That's something I definitely want to see eventually is the DNA Center. I've heard a lot about it. Haven't seen one in the wild yet. All I know is it's extremely expensive. Is it worth it? Maybe. But that's definitely one thing I want to see, just to see it. I mean, yeah, I can look up stuff on YouTube and look up demos, but that's not going to cure me until I can sit down and actually see it, use it, and work with it.
Right, it is expensive. It seems like a good solution, you know, because you can push software updates and push config out and things like this. But, you know, the purchase price up front is hard to justify for most organizations. But that's typical of Cisco, it seems like. So for your CCNP, there is a boot camp. It's just called Training Camp. You may be familiar with them. They put on pretty good in-person and virtual training courses. And then there's a site. Maybe they still have some practice tests, but it's just called howtopass.com. How2pass.com. They're pretty good. I went to the training camp for the CCNP security, and it was a 9-day course. And on the last day, you take the exam there at the training facility, and it worked out pretty well. So I was able to get the CCNP security after taking that course. So might be worth consideration if you're interested.
I'll definitely look into that. I'm not sure if I'm going to try for it this year. I may need a little bit more hands-on, on-the-job experience to see how all this stuff fits together. But I'll definitely take a look into that.
They're pretty good. This is WB4ZPH. One of the employees that reports to me, he's going to go to a training camp, boot camp for the CCNA in May, and that one is being held in Dallas, Texas. But they have them in Philadelphia, and I think they have them sometimes in Atlanta as well. So, if you can find a way to get your organization to pay for the course, you'll be sitting pretty. But they can be a little bit expensive, not unreasonable if you can get some help from your organization. But I guess I would say it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely worth it. I think now to me it's more of a, this is for a personal goal that I want to try to achieve, is get CCNP.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good goal, and that's a good goal to have for sure. After I took the CCNP, the three test CCNP before they changed it, my supervisor and I went and took the CCIE written exam, and it seemed, if my memory serves correctly, it took us about three times before we could pass that CCIE written exam. And we kind of kicked around the idea of pursuing that certification. But, man, that's a real commitment, a real time commitment. You basically need your employer to pay you to prepare for that exam and give you 6 months or so to just nothing but get ready for it, because that's a difficult exam there, but it certainly differentiates you from the rest of the pack. I've heard that one thing that you have to, you know, you really have to be fast on a keyboard when you're taking that exam. It's an 8-hour lab exam, but you really can't waste any time during that test session.
Yep, copy that. One of my coworkers, I think probably end of last month, passed his CCIE, and I was just like, wow. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, it's a huge accomplishment, probably personally and for on the job, but man, that's just unbelievable.
Out. That's an exceptional accomplishment. Real challenge. I've known a few people who have it, and you know, like I say, most of them, it seems like they were afforded ample opportunity to prepare for it. One gentleman that I occasionally work with on a consulting basis, he worked for IBM in the 90s, and they did that for him. You know, they basically gave him a year, I think it was, that he didn't have any responsibilities with the exception of preparing for the CCIE lab, and he got it, and then he kept it up, kept the certification up for 20 years, and then after you reach the 20-year marker, you go into an emeritus status, and you don't have to renew it anymore by taking the written exam. The only other individuals I've had interactions with that had that certification are a professor of mine, who's currently a professor in the class that I'm in now at USC Upstate. He has his CCIE and his CISSP, so he's a very, very credentialed individual.
That's amazing, and just the amount of dedication that someone has to keep up with CCIE for 20 some odd years. That is amazing.
Yeah, he said before, you know, it was so tiring, and he was so ready to reach that point so that he wouldn't have to recertify by taking the written exam every 2 years. I think he had to take it every 2 years. And he was very happy to reach that point where he would reach that emeritus status, because he said he was just so tired of studying every 2 years to try and renew. But he's a super nice guy, super down-to-earth guy, and he's a real outdoorsman, too. He's a hunter and fisherman, and just a good guy. Does deer hunting, turkey hunting. And, you know, he likes to fish anywhere there's water. So it seems like, you know, he's got a good balance in life, and doesn't work too much. He runs his own consulting firm. Quite the determination, I think, to keep the cert up that long. Most of the ones I've had, I don't think I'd want to keep any of them for 20 years.
Copy that. I'm the same way. I'm not sure if I would keep a CCNA for 20 some odd years. That just goes to show the dedication. But yeah, I'm gonna need to call it a night here soon. I need to get some sleep. It was nice chatting with you there. I did a little bit of Googling earlier, and on your wiring issue. Check under the driver's side footwell is what I was reading up and checking on about for your Subaru STI there, so you may want to check there next time you get a chance.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's about that time to turn it in. Yeah, I'll check under the footwell there. The challenge is, you know, it's being such a low riding car, basically have to turn yourself upside down and put your feet on the headrest just to get up and under there. So I'll check it out and see what I can find. I need to shore all that up and get everything permanently installed. But it was nice talking with you, Stephen. Hope you have a good evening. I'll probably catch you on here tomorrow or later on in the week, I imagine. KR4AE from WB4ZPH 73.
Talking to you too. I'll say 73Z. I'll probably catch you sometime in the morning. This is KR4AAE for WB4ZPH. Have a good evening. KR4AAE clear.